Can you hear me? Is the mic on at all? I guess I'm going to have to yell then. Is that better? Can you hear anything yet? Anything? Yeah, but I mean, you're not hearing it through the sound system. Nothing? Are you sure? I can hear something. You can't hear anything through the speakers? I keep putting the microphone up. Nothing happens? How about this one? Is that... No? Nothing? Mehmet, do you have a watch? Could I borrow your watch? Could I borrow your watch? Because there's no clock and I don't have a watch. Thank you. I already started the recording, so there'll be a lot of junk on the beginning. And I had Netscape up to show those other examples, but it crashed, so I'll just go ahead and do this part. Do you know the URL of the database stuff on Kayak? From last year? Okay, do you want to log it in and see if you can... Okay, tonight we're going to talk about database background, continuing the introduction that Jeffrey gave last time. And I'm going to give this first talk about databases in which it talks about essentially Oracle and relational databases. So this is the first module in a sequence of talks that is going to not only discuss background in databases, but talk about the web programming connection to databases that will be given in later talks. So in this talk, we'll talk about what a relational database is, go through an example with a phone list, and talk about some of the properties of Oracle databases in particular. That's the first module. The other modules talk more. I may get to module two tonight if there's enough time to talk more about the language SQL, which is the standard language that you use to access relational databases, and then go on from there to talk about how to do several of the interfaces in which you can use to program SQL from the web. The third module talks about that also. The fourth module is actually a set of tutorial notes and lab sessions, and if we're lucky, I'll get to show you where that is on the web. Yes? I don't know exactly how we're going to set that up, but we are going to have programs for you to do. We'll set up accounts for you on the Oracle server that we've installed on Osprey 7, the same one as where your CGI accounts are. I'm sorry, I can't talk over all these noise. There's been a lot of background noise, particularly now because I don't sound too bad now, but you should have heard me this morning when I first got up. Yes? I don't know which of these turns. This one? Better? I'll just have to yell. Now, so these notes were handed out on Monday, and I'm sorry I didn't know where the extras were, so I didn't bring extra copies, but I believe... Oh, Mehmet brought them. Okay. So Oracle, the relational database management system, is one that has been particularly suited for large commercial databases, worrying about space management control and having lots of database users. And they, of course, they want to have a high-performance database, so you want to have as many users as possible to be able to access the database concurrently. So there are issues of concurrency in how the database is kept, what they call database integrity, that the database is kept consistent over the number of different possibly write accesses to the database. Now, also in a corporate environment, the database management system has to have various security levels built in, various availability levels. Different people should be able to access the database at different levels. And we won't get into that as much in this part of the course because we're going to emphasize sort of the web programming interface. The language SQL is used to access the database, and this has become pretty much an industry-accepted standard for relational databases. Most products use that. So in order to show these properties of relational databases, we're going to show a simple example that's going to illustrate the important concepts. We're not going to have time to go into relational databases in detail. You could have a full semester course in that. But we will try to show some of the concepts through this example. So the example will be a phoneless database and in which you can look up a person's phone number with various query criteria. So essentially, this database, of course, is pretty simple. We're not going to have to go through a lot of design. And you might think, of course, to start with, that all you have to do is associate each person with a phone number. But it looks a little more complicated than that because we have some complications in that one person can have different phone numbers for different uses. So we do have to have more than one phone number for each person. And you, of course, you can have, in some situations, like in the graduate student rooms, there's one phone number that serves a lot of different people. So we have some complications that led us to design this database so that there are essentially two quantities that we have to worry about, what in a database would be called entities. And the first are the people, and the second are the phone numbers. So there are actually going to be two what are called tables in the database world, in which you and one is that for each person there's going to be information about that person, and the other is that for each phone number there will be information about those phone numbers. So there will be these two tables. Here on this slide is shown an example of the first kind of table. It's the one that gives information about people. So for example, there are fields that are shown as columns in this table. We can give those fields names. The first is called PID. It's going to each person is going to be assigned a unique identification number, and this number is only used internally to the database. Then there's a last name field, a first name field, title, user ID, address is where their office is, and the URL of their home page, if they have one. Okay, so I'm going to show those at the end. Oh, okay. I don't know if this is in the end. What did you click on to get that? Okay. the second table, in which we have phone numbers are the entities. And for each phone, we have what the type of the phone is. Also for each phone, we have the ID number of the person that that phone number belongs to. So in relational databases, you talk about entities and relationships. Notice that each of these tables is each table is talking about a particular entity. And in addition, the PID column essentially expresses the relationship between the entries of the second database with the entries of the first database, because it's showing which phone numbers belong to which people. So that's shown on this slide, the entity relationship model. Notice that the person that identity number, the PID, has to be unique in the person table. But what that does is it allows one person from the person table to have multiple phone numbers, even of the same or different types in the second table, and it allows one phone number in the second table to be assigned to a number of different people so that one phone number can be shared. So in this example, the first table is showing, in the terminology of databases, the entities are the people, and what the various columns are is sometimes called the attributes. So those are showing attributes of those information about those people. The second table, of course, the entity is the phone numbers, and the type of phone number is an attribute of the phone number entry, but we're using the PID column, as I said, to set up the relationship between the two tables. So this is more complex than just a simple database like, what's a simple database? Like a card catalog or something, where you just have entries of one type. Because you do have entries of two different types, and you have columns with the relationship between them. And you can think about extending that to a more complex thing. Suppose that in addition to keeping track of people and phone numbers, you wanted to keep track of what room they were in. And you can see that there are, so between the people and the phone numbers, as we explained, we had what is known as a many-to-many relationship. Because for each person, we wanted to be able to associate them with a number of phone numbers. And for each phone number, we wanted it to be possible to associate them with a number of people. So that's a many-to-many relationship. If you introduce rooms, then you probably only have a many-to-one relationship to a room, because probably you might have more than one person in a room, but usually one person doesn't get assigned more than one office, unless you're very lucky or very influential or something. Between rooms and phones, again, you might have a many-to-many relationship, assuming that because each room can have any number of phones, and each phone number can actually be assigned to more than one room if you had extensions on the phone or something like that. So here you would set up three tables for the different entities that you had. You would have different columns that would keep track of the information for what is called the different attributes, and then you could have another set of tables that could describe the relationships between people in rooms and between phones in rooms and so on. So that's how complex relational databases are built up. You think about these entity relationships model in building up the database. There are some rules about how the database can be set up. The first rule is that you're not allowed to have rows in the table, what's sometimes called records or entries, in which one column has more than one value, a multi-valued column. But of course, that's easy because actually what you can have is two different rows, which is what we did. We had one row in which person 3 was assigned to this phone number, and another row in which person 4 was assigned to this phone number. And the other thing about relational databases is that you access the content, or access the database, the rows, the entries, only by their contents. So you're not allowed to retrieve rows or columns by some number of how, what order they were added to the database or something like that. That is, you can't say, get the second row in the table. You can say, get the row from the table where the person ID is equal to 2, or get certain column values of all the rows in the phone list table where the column... what is named as phone number, well, where the phone number has a particular value, for example. So you can refer, you can always search for things where, to find a row where a particular entry has a particular value, or where the set of rows for which those entries have those values. And then there's another rule, the uniqueness rule. You're not allowed to have two different rows which have exactly the same information. So if you have a row which already has PID3 and this phone number and type office, you're not allowed to add another row with exactly those same values. Before I go on to talk more about the relations here, let me just make a general remark about relational databases, which is that you always have this table structure. It's always a regular table where you have some number of columns, which are the fields or the attributes of each entry. You have some number of rows, which you think of as being the records. And the rows always have the same length. And the columns always have the same type of information. So you can't have things like one column in which you get one type of information or another. And you can't have things like records in which you get some, which there is a column of a particular type that you might expect to be repeated any number of times of variable length. It's always that the records have the same number of columns. So this is all very regular. And the reason that this is regular is so that these the relational database operations can be applied in a regular fashion. And this is all built on relational algebra theory. The operations that you can do on the database, there are set operations, union, intersection, difference, and product. And there are the other native relational operations, project, in which you select particular numbers of columns, select, in which you pick out particular rows that have particular property, you know, that have values in particular columns. Join, in which you essentially take two tables and join them together end to end so that all the columns of this table are added to all the columns of that table. And then there are various kinds of joins based on how you can essentially line up the rows so that the, and I won't go into that in detail. Union, go back to that, is essentially putting together tables that have, if you have two tables that have the same column labels, you can put them together by putting the rows together, whereas a join is putting together by putting the columns, adding on the columns. In relational databases, the sort of the basic structure is the table, but in addition to the table, you might have a hierarchy of tables that go together, or particular types of users that have a set of tables, and then there might be a set of users. There might be a hierarchy of how the tables are put together into the entire database structure. And in general, in relational databases, these are called the schema. The higher levels of this structure are called the schema, and we'll talk about how that's represented in Oracle, and a little bit more about database operations. And then also the database operations that we described in general as the relational operations, you can have integrity rules to make sure that certain properties are preserved in the database as you carry out the operation. So in Oracle, the sort of the highest schema is called a table space. So the Oracle system usually has a database administrator. There is actually a server which is going to accept requests for access to the database. The database administrator puts up that server and structures sort of the, or gives users accounts, which we're all going to give you accounts on Office 7, and structures the whatever disk space is available to the database server into table spaces that different users can manage. And so typically you put into a table space all of the tables that you want to be together for a particular application or for a particular user. So this is an illustration of an Oracle database system, which has been divided into two table spaces, and the system table space has one file, data file on this disk, and the user's table space has one on this disk and one on this disk, and so that just showing that different physical storage can be assigned to different databases. So the tables in Oracle are actually called tables, has the same word, and each table is defined by giving it a table name and by telling what the set of columns is. So you define a table by essentially saying what the names of all the attributes, all the columns. So each column has a name, and it also has a data type. There's a set of types, which we'll talk more about later, but it includes things like these character types are actually strings of characters. There are dates, there are numbers, and some other things. And you also give a width, which is how much space to use to save that column. So this is all very regular. You're expecting each column or each row to have the same number of column entries and each column entry to take up the same amount of space. So you can really think of it as a table, sort of a rectangular space that's being saved for your table. Once you've created a table, then you can insert other rows of data. It just means add them to the database. Insert is kind of misleading because you don't actually say in what order the rows occur, so inserting just adds the row somewhere. You can also query rows. You can delete them or update them in place. So in order to create those two tables that we had earlier, we would have two create table commands. And these are the SQL commands. You say create table. You give the name of the table, person info table. Then you give a list of the columns. And these are the column names, person ID, the type, number, and the width, in this case 6. So there are other types here, namely variable length character strings is the other one used here. So this is the first table, has everything about people, and the second table has its own create table thing. It's the phone list table. It has a person ID, a phone number, and a phone type as the column. Now, actually, this is just the first pass. We're going to show you later how to put some constraints on what these values of these fields might be. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yes. No, I believe it is allocated, but The idea is that it makes a difference in how you compare the strings. If you use car, you always know that your string is padded out with blanks to the full length. Whereas varkar, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, you just assume that you have as much of the string as is defined when you're working with it. But my belief is that it will save the amount of space that it needs to hold to, you know, for the maximum width. I will check on that and make sure. So the tables are the thing. Oh, excuse me. The tables are the things that actually contain the data. They have the rows and columns, but there are other kinds of structures that you can put on them, and one of those kinds of things is a view. And a view doesn't actually store or contain any data. It derives data from pre-existing tables, but it just presents a different view of that data to the user. Like tables, you can make queries of views, but for example, a view might be derived from a table in which you selected only particular numbers of rows. And so that view might only present part of the table to the user to be queried further. And if you make queries or operations like updating and deleting on a view, it actually affects the data on the underlying tables. I think I have another slide on this. So one of the things you can use a view for is to restrict access to part of the database for different users. So for some users, for example, if you had employee databases, there might be some information that was fairly public within the company, but there might be some information that was fairly private, and only people with certain access properties would be able to have a view, which included all of the columns. Other people would only see a view of the database in which the public columns were presented, and they wouldn't be able to query and find out information about columns that were supposed to be kept private. Another reason to have a view of a table is just that you may have a fairly complex set of tables, and sometimes you only want to work with small parts of the information, so you're hiding the complexity of the data by just giving a simple view of some parts of it. You can use a view to do a join, to display information from more than one table, or parts of information from more than one table, all in one single view. One of the reasons to do this is that it to do views as well, is that it might be fairly there might be a fair amount of computation in selecting a particular set of rows or columns, a particular set of rows. And so you might want to save that as a view so that you don't have to keep recomputing how to select that particular set of rows. I think I covered all of those. So here's an example of defining a view on our little example database. So suppose that, I mean, we have this phone index for all the people at NPAC, and suppose that we want to have a view which only picks out the rows which are NPAC staff. So then we would have a view which was the phone table for the subset of the MPAC, which is known as the MPAC staff. So you could, you'd say create view, and you'd give it a new name, staff info table, just as if it were a table. Remember that it's going to have, going to be able to have all the data table operations performed on it. And you create it as, and then you give a select statement. So a select statement is a statement which does a query on the database. And this particular one says select star. The star here means select all the columns. And when you query the database, you are allowed to put the list of column names if you want to select only a subset of the columns. From person info table, where And then after the where, after the from, you give the name of the table or view that you're going to make the query from. Then after the where, you give the condition that you want this query to satisfy. So in this case, we're going to select all the rows that satisfy the condition that it's not the case that the position field, notice that this is the name of one of the columns, has the value GRA, or the position field has the value student. So we're going to select all the rows in which the position field is not GRA or student, and that should give us all the staff. Actually, in this database, it's simple enough, the number of positions, that we could also create a view of the staff info table. It would be equivalent to say select all the columns from person info table where position equals staff or position equal director. And that would give us all the staff. So this shows sort of a basic query statement as well as creating a view. Oracle also has a concept known as sequences, where within a single column of a database's tables, you can generate a sequence of numbers. And this is useful to do something like generating that series of unique numbers that we wanted for our person ID. In Oracle, so far what I've been showing you is talking mostly about the concepts of the relational database and its operations. And in the next talk, but the examples I've given actually have shown operations like create table and select from the language SQL. And we'll talk more about the syntax of the language SQL in the next module. But in Oracle, there are a number of ways in which you can have an interface to the SQL command. SQL is what's known as sometimes as a data sublanguage. It's a language in which you can access data. You can use this language SQL embedded in some other programming language so that you can program the accesses to the database. You can also use SQL in what's sometimes called, direct access or interactive mode, where you just sit at a terminal and you can just type in commands like select something from a particular table. Or you can actually save those commands as little macros and have them called up. But we're going to show you some of the programming side where you can not only collect together a collection of SQL, the data access commands, but you can embed it in a programming language so that you can perform complex tasks on the database. And you can collect together sets of these as procedures. These are treated also as schema objects in Oracle. Oracle also has a notion called package in which you collect together a number of procedures or functions as a unit in the database so that you can, it provides a way of making a standard interface to some database that not only do you have with it the tables, like for the employees and so on, but you have a package of standard functions which do fairly complex operations on the database. One of the other concepts in Oracle is that you are allowed to have aliases for these various things with names. The aliases are called synonyms. So for the tables, views, sequences, program units, you can introduce synonyms. The synonyms can be either public or private. A private synonym is only visible to the user that created it, but there can be public synonyms created most likely by the database administrator to make schema objects widely available to people that are using that database. So synonyms are useful not only just to provide short names, but to protect. Sometimes the path name might contain the user that created that particular table because it's part of their table space, so that you can mask off that by giving a public synonym that doesn't reveal normally the name of the table and the, I want to say methods, but that's because I'm used to Java. The procedures and functions that you use on it are given by a dot notation similar to what you would do in an object-oriented system. And so that dot notation starts out with the highest level, with the table space, goes down through users to the tables that they've created. And so that can be a quite fairly lengthy path name, but also can reveal the name of the user, and you might want to introduce synonyms to deal with that. Or what is called location transparency. So people can't see actually where in this whole hierarchy of table spaces and so on the database actually resides. So it's a security and a protection measure. So here's an instance of creating a synonym. Create public synonym, HTTP for CPS616.HTTP. And this is a pretty simple one that's just got one level of dot in the access name, but in commercial databases it might be quite a complex structure. Now, one of the things that's really important and actually what is distinguishing in Oracle relational databases compared to some simpler ones is that you are allowed to construct indices which don't affect the data in the tables but can affect the performance in how you access the data. Namely, that you can create a structure, an index or a cluster associated with the table. The indices are created on one or more columns of the table, and it provides an faster access path to locating requested rows that where you're making the request by looking for values of that particular column. So if there is a particular column like last name in our example, maybe that's the most frequently used column to do queries. You look up people by their last names. So if we created an index on this column, it would improve most queries using this field. So we can say create index, give the name of the index on the person info table, and give the column that we want the index to be created on. And so instead of going through and searching, when you make a query on values of that column, instead of going through and searching the table, there will already be a structure constructed that indexes there, so you just have to search the index and not the entire table. So when should you create an index in order to create performance? And the rows, right, first of all, where is it in this list? You want this to be for it's up at the top here. Queries that select a small percentage of rows from the table. So this only works really for columns in which the values, if not unique, there are not very many duplicate values. So indices don't give you improved performance. For example, on a field, suppose you had people and you were keeping track of what sex they were. So it's either male or female. So suppose half the people were male and half the people were female. This is not a good column to create an index on because it's not going to be very distinguishing in finding rows. It's not going to improve in performance. So you want it to be where there are not very many duplicate values in the column to start off with. And then there are some other criteria for how the performance is going to be. If they do have the same value for the column, it should be sort of uniformly distributed over the table. You don't want most of the rows that have unique values, but one particular value has a lot of them. You want sort of a uniform distribution. The rows should be randomly ordered with respect to that column. Each data block should have at least 10 rows. So these are getting into fairly detailed performance issues. The table should have a small number of columns. With advice from Oracle about when creating indices would actually give you a performance benefit. Notice that the point of creating the index is to achieve the performance benefit on the queries, but actually creating the index creates a performance deficit on doing table update operations, inserting a row, updating the values of a row, or deleting a row, because every time you do one of those operations, not only do you have to change the value of the table, but you have to go and change the way that the index is constructed. So you also have to take that into account, sort of how many times you're doing queries as opposed to how many times you're doing updates to the table, whether this is going to help you in your performance. Here are some more fairly detailed recommendations about how to choose columns for indexing, and I don't think we need to go through all of those. So here are the other schema objects in Oracle. Clusters, where you have one or more tables that you want to make sure are physically stored together on the same disk, because they're used together all the time and it will give you better performance. There are so-called, what Oracle calls data dictionaries, what are sometimes called by the relational database world as metadata, which is data that describes how the tables are stored and what the views are and so on. So actually there are commands in which you can access the metadata that in the data dictionary. For example, you could look up your table space quota. It's part of the metadata about how the table spaces are stored. So now we come to the important topic of constraints and how to put properties on or rules that rows that the tables are going to adhere to. For example, suppose that in our phone list table we want to make sure that there is no that it's not allowed to add a row to the phone list table with a person number where that person doesn't exist in the person list table. So that would be a reasonable thing, and that's a data integrity constraint, because we're going to have queries that depend on the relationship that every phone number belongs to a person that's in the person table. So if we can put that constraint on the create table list, and we'll show you how to do that in a minute. And if we put that kind of constraint on, if people try to insert or update a statement or update a row in the phone list table which violates this constraint, then Oracle will refuse to allow that update. This says it will do what's called a rollback, which essentially is that it just doesn't allow that operation to take place. If the rollback means that the operation is part of, you can group operations into something called transactions. We'll talk about this in a minute, where you want to be guaranteed that all the operations in a transaction either all happen or they all don't happen. And so if it comes to an operation like that violates a constraint, that means that this set of operations can't happen, it will do the rollback. It will make sure that none of those operations happen. So actually what we want to do here is to have what's called a foreign key, which is that we're going to say when we define the table for the phone list table that the values of the person ID column must in fact be a reference to the person ID column of the person info table. So it says directly that every value of the person ID table in the phone list must occur in the person list. So here are the a list of integrity constraints that you can put when you create a table. They're stored as part of the table's definition. These are the ones supported by Oracle. You can say that a column must be not null. That is, normally you're allowed that a column either has a well-defined value of that type, or it might actually be empty. And in that case, it's said that it has the value null. But you can disallow that. You can say, I'm not going to allow entries in this column to be null. Furthermore, you can say that you want the entries of this column to be unique, which means that you can't have any duplicate values in that column. And so that's the case, for example, of the person ID column that we had in the person table, which is that we wanted each row to have a unique person number. Then primary key is the combination of both of those. It says that you have to have unique values, that is, you're disallowing duplicate values, and you don't allow nulls. A foreign key, then, is a column in one table is required to have a value, they say a reference, that has a column that occurs in another table. And that's, as I said, that's exactly what we want on our person ID column in the phone list. There's also a more general check constraint that in which you follow the check by a logical expression that is on values of one or more columns that you say must be satisfied, so that it disallows rows in which the values don't satisfy whatever this expression might be. So here's the more complete create table that has the constraints for our example. So we might have create table for a person where the person ID is required to be a primary key, which means that the person ID has to be unique and not null. So the person ID will essentially be, it doesn't have to be a sequence of numbers, although in fact that's what we created was a sequence of numbers, but it has to be that there are a set of unique numbers. So when we add the row people to the phone list, or to the person list, we'll assign them numbers in sequence, but of course from time to time we may delete people so that they're not in a strict sequence, but they'll still all be unique. Then down here we have a constraint. This one's I won't say what I think. This one is trying to illustrate the use of the check constraint, where you give an expression here, and in this case there is a function. There are functions upper and lower. There are some other functions as well that you can use on a particular field value, and in this case it's uppercase. If you say upper of some field value, it converts the string that's in the field to all uppercase. So this is making sure that the title field is in uppercase, because it says the title has to equal uppercase of the title. So that's just a constraint, showing the check constraint. And then finally, down here, we're saying that if you don't put in a value, the default is null. You can make other default values so that if people add rows and they leave out values for particular columns, there's a default that goes in there. I didn't talk about that as constraint, but you're allowed to say what the default is for a particular column. Then on our phone list table, on the person ID, here is where we say the constraint is that this particular field has to reference person info table in column person underbar ID. So every value that occurs in the person ID column of the phone list table has to be a value that occurs in the person ID column of the person table. Then these other fields don't have any more constraints, And note that for every column that you indicate as a primary key or a unique key, Oracle will automatically create an index for that. So you don't have to do that. Since we indicated a person ID as a primary key, in fact, Oracle will create an index in which we can look up the person ID. And actually, the person ID, looking up the person ID is probably not something that we want to do, because person IDs, in this case, is assigned by the database. But in general, things like that are social security numbers and things that you do tend to look up. Here's a little bit more about the data types. So the character field is for fixed-length character strings. If you give a shorter value, then it's padded out with blanks, so that every time you deal with the value, and if you give a value with too many trailing blanks, then they're trimmed off. Every time you deal with the value of that field, it's going to give you a string, which is that fixed length. And bar chart 2 is variable character length strings, and now this says that it doesn't, I stand corrected, doesn't allocate all the space for the maximum length. It only assumes stores in blocks of 10, however many characters are given. So I stand corrected. And furthermore, every time you use a value from the varchar field, it assumes that the value has the exact length of what you gave it and doesn't pad it out with blanks. And this makes different semantics for comparing values of fields. The number field stores fixed and floating point numbers. Virtually any magnitude can be stored. The date fields, databases are pretty careful about having a data type called date, in which they can be pretty exact about timestamps on the database. It's an important operation. Actually, a lot of data, it doesn't mention it here, but a lot of databases also allow you to deal with intervals of time. It's an important concept in databases. Every row does have a row ID assigned to it. You can have types for large pieces of data that you're not going to look up on. If it's text, you have a data type called long, in which you can put, large clumps of text. But it's going to assume that you're not going to make queries in which you go and look for particular substrings of that text, for example, or particular values of the text. It's really a big long text. So the only thing you're allowed to do is to put this column into the list so that you select it out, you can set it, and you can get the value. You can't query for a particular value. There's raw and long raw for data which is binary data or byte strings for other kinds of things, if it's not text, with similar properties. So this is a typical thing if you have database where you have fields in which you want to keep some identifying information, like about particular text selection, and then you want to keep a large document or an image or various other kinds of large things, information. So any relational database assumes that you're going to have a number of people that are going to be making transactions to the database at any one time. So data must be read and modified in a consistent fashion. Let me just check the next slide here a minute. Right. So that you don't start doing one data transaction, and if you come into a problem, you want to make sure that that transaction doesn't happen. You also want to maximize the concurrency. That is, if you have a lot of users accessing parts of a database, if one way to make sure that you have this data consistency property is every time one user is using the table, you don't allow other users to use the table. But that's too coarse-grained, because it doesn't allow for maximum concurrency. And in general, the kind of locking that the database will do occurs more at, for example, the row level and so on, so that you could have different users making updates on different rows at the same at the table at the same time. But that's the kind of issues that the database worries about when it's doing concurrency control. That is, it's expecting to have a number of users that are trying to access the same data at once. It has to make sure that if somebody is writing the part of the data, the people that are reading the data don't see a mixture of old data and new data. And notice that this is in a relational database, this can happen over a fairly complex interval. That is, you might have an operation that changes a row of one table, like to put in a person, then it will want to change rows of another table, like to put in phone numbers, and it has to make sure that the constraints between the phone number row and the person rows are satisfied. So this is a transaction. This is called a transaction, but because it consists of a number of different operations on various parts of the database. And so that's what Oracle and other relational databases organize their concurrency control around. That is, you have the idea of a transaction as a set of operations that must be guaranteed to happen in a consistent manner. That is, if they're going to make a change to the database, they have to be guaranteed to all be done. If you're reading the database, you never see the database in a sort of in-between state. So part of those operations have been done, and part of them have not been done. So this is the idea also of, where is it, of commitment. So the idea is that the database arranges its updates so that in any transaction, it's always prepared to do a rollback. That is, it's always prepared, as you do a sequence of operations, at any time to go back to where you started and have none of those operations take place. But if you're doing the sequence of operations and you get through successfully, then it will do what's called a commit. And a commit is that it will make all those changes to the database in such a way that nobody who's tried to read the database gets in the middle and sees data in some intermediate form. So a commit operation, it happens at one time, all the data is changed at the end of the transaction. So this is what's called consistency. The user always sees the database in a consistent state. Either the entire transaction has taken place or it hasn't. There are other there are particular properties of the way that Oracle has done the consistency and concurrency, and so that it ensures a number of properties. The first is that they want to ensure that the readers of the database don't wait for writers or other readers of the same data. So essentially, if somebody is doing a read transaction and somebody else is doing a write transaction to the same piece of data, it's really as if you had your own private copy. So the person who's reading the data goes ahead and reads what's there, even while somebody else is trying to write that. At the time of the commit, then the actual writing, the entire writing transaction will actually take place on the database, and the readers after that will see the write operation. So writers are not supposed to read to wait for readers. And writers only wait for other writers if they're attempting to update the same rows, the identical rows. So the, all the locking done by Oracle is done on a row. This talks about commitment. I already talked about that. So Oracle does all this automatically for you, as all databases do. It has a notion of locking on rows of the database. It introduces the locks itself when there are concurrent accesses to the data to keep the rules of consistency that we just talked about. So there are a number of Oracle lock managers that are automatically introduced. Maintaining locks, as I said, the lowest level is row-level locking, although there are cases in which table-level locking might be possible. Also, there might be exclusive locks and shared locks, depending on what kind of access is taking place. Now, it also is the case that Oracle allows you some control over the locking. You're allowed some manual locking where you can override the default locking at the row level or the table level. Oh, that must be the last slide. There's no next slide. Okay, we have a number of examples prepared, and it's part of this Oracle web tutorial. And it's I'm not going to give you this URL right at this moment because it's currently on the Kayak server. Can you see this at all? Oh, this is too small. I just grab this window? How do I make this bigger? Oh, there we go. So we're going to have this moved. It has been moved to Osprey 7, which is the same machine that your Oracle server will be on. So we'll get that URL to you as soon as possible. You want the URL now? All right, you can have the URL now. I didn't bring my plastic, my transparency. Shall I just read it to you? It's Kayak, K-A-Y-A-K, .impact.syr.edu:3768, which is the same one that we use for Osprey, /users/CWOU/database. CWOU. It's the user ID of ChaoAO or ChaoAU. Yes, Kayak. Do you know how to spell Kayak? K-A-Y-A-K. Right. .impact.syr.edu:3768/users. /CWOU/database. And this is all in lowercase, no caps. That gets you to this page. And on this page, what I wanted to show you, we'll be doing these other things later, PLSQL or a Perl, and actually we're going to add the stuff for the JDBC. But here is a little tutorial on SQL, and we're going to do more of this syntax next time, but I just wanted to show you some examples on this database. So here is our example database. Here is the person info table in more detail. There's a lot of people there. Here's the phone table. Here are the create table commands. You already saw these, so I won't go over those quickly. They were on the slide. But also we have here a bunch of other commands that we talked about, and we'll talk about more when we talk about SQL. We said you could add rows to a table, and the way you do that is the insert command. You say insert into, for example, person info table, and you give them a keyword called values, in which you specify the values of all the columns. And either you give the in this first example, you don't have to say the names of the columns because you're giving all the giving a value for every column in order. So this is the giving values for all the columns in order. This runs off the end, but that's okay. The other thing you can do is insert a row in which you're only giving values to particular columns. And if you don't give a value for a column, then either it'll have a default value or it'll be assigned a value null. In that case, you can give a list of column names, and then you give the values that you want assigned to those particular columns. Now, update is similar to the last part, where you can say update an imputation, and you say set a particular column equal to a particular value. And then you give a where, which selects one or more rows in which you want that update to happen. You give some constraint or some relational expression here, which is going to evaluate to the number of tables in which that's going to happen. Here's the command for deleting a row. I want to get down to some of these queries. Now, in SQL, the select function is used both for the operations that in a relational database are called select, in which you select some number of rows, and project, in which you pick out some number of columns. So here's an example where you're saying select, and then you give a list of the columns that you want, person ID, last name, and first name, from the person info table, where, and then you give an expression that is going to pick out the number of rows that you want to select from as well. So this is doing both the select. In fact, this is only picking out one row because person ID is unique. So it's going to. So we know that only one row will be picked. In general, in a database, there might be more than one row that would, in which a particular column had a particular value. But this will be one row, and it will pick just those three columns. Here's an example of. Here's the example of the output from that particular query. Here's an example where, what is it? I want query by name. All right. So we can say something like select and give some list of columns that we want to find the information of from person info table where, and we want to select all the fields in which the last name contains the substring OU for some reason. So this is showing some of the functions that you have available. First of all, you lower, that is, translate to lowercase all of the last name strings so that you can do a comparison. Then this like is a matching operator. It's to match whatever's here. In the string here, if you put the percent signs, it says to match any number of characters in this that occur where the percent sign occurs. So this is any characters followed by the characters OU followed by some more characters is what the matching condition is. So this should find all the people whose last name contains OU. And in fact, here are the two, John Hull and Chao Ayo. And notice why we had to use the lower, to make sure that we could match a lowercase O and a U. Okay. Oh, yeah, I wanted to show. Here's a query for selecting something from the phone list table where person ID equals 43, and lower of phone type equals whatever. There's some value over there. I won't. Well, I can scroll over there and find out. Lowercase of author. So this is a typical relation where you can add together the conditions that you want to have met. And of course, you can use the other operations as well, or and not, and so on. And it turns out there's only one row that satisfies that criteria. You can also query multiple tables so that you can ask to select a list of columns, some of which occur in some table and some of which occur in a different table, from, and then you give the names of the two tables, and you're also allowed to assign a unique name to each of the tables. So we're assigning person info table to also have the name A, and phone list table B to also have phone list table to also have the name B. And in that way, we use A and B to talk about column names which might occur in both tables. So in this case, we're checking where person ID in table A, that is the person info table, equals 17, and also person ID in table A is equal to the person ID in table B. So not only can you query things from different tables, but you have this mechanism for querying things from different tables where you want to talk about field names which may be duplicated between the two tables. Okay, so I wanted you to see those examples of doing the queries, and I don't really have time to start the SQL part. I think next time we'll start to go on to talk more about SQL and the web and programming and web interfaces to doing the database commands. And my voice survived. Is it working?